Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and we're going to just kind of hang out here in Google Hangout today for a while, and we're going to talk tech, talk about the upcoming CES show and a variety of other topics. We've got an open mic, or basically on Google Hangout today, so we could have a bunch of people showing up that are just general followers, which is fine. We're expecting Rob Greenlee to be in here in a few minutes, but new addition to the show this year, or this time, is we've actually got a sponsor. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but it's been a few weeks since we did a hangout. I've been between traveling to Okinawa, traveling to Utah, traveling to Texas. It seems like every weekend that there was to be a Saturday Morning Tech, I was either in an airplane or somewhere where there was no gear to record a show with the folks that we wanted to do the show with. So this will be the first back in the saddle one. We'll have probably not next Saturday because it's the Christmas Eve. I doubt we'll be able to round up enough people to do a Saturday Morning Tech, but we'll do one New Year's Eve with any luck. And then we will not have one the week of CES. So a couple of shows here during the holidays. But I do want to thank Audible for being a sponsor here for Saturday Morning Tech. And the best thing you can do to help out the show and help out our coverage for CES is to give Audible a try. And this is a great way to basically get a free book on me for the holidays. And you get a free 14-day trial by going over to audiblepodcast.com/geeknews. That gets you that free 14-day trial. And I've been listening to a lot of books. The one I just finished up was called The Gadgetplex. And took a while to get through it, but it's kind of a great way to check stuff out while I'm mobile. But anyway, again, audiblepodcast.com/geeknews. But got a bunch of people jumping in here this morning. We've got Alan. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Good, Todd. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing good. So I know that you're one of our writers at Geek News Central, and you've been putting up some great content. Thank you for that. We'll come back to you in a second. But Andrew, good morning.
Hello, audio check.
Morning, Todd.
Audio check.
And Dion, we can hear you fine. It looks like you're mobile at the moment. Is that true?
Yep, I am currently going southbound on the 14 freeway from La Palmdale, California, down to the San Fernando Valley.
You know, I had, when Ustream first launched, I was using a EVDO card quite a bit to do the same thing that you're doing right now, is driving around hunting for houses. So it's kind of cool. You can hang out while you're cruising down the road. Now, what are you using? Are you using a fixed camera on your car? And then are you, what kind of a connection are you connected in right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going through the mountains right now, so it's evil right now. What I got is I got $9 that I bought at Kmart camcorder.
I think
I think
the mountain's killing
off.
Yeah, he'll come back. Gary, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing this morning?
Hey, Dion, you dropped off there for a little bit because of the mountains. We'll wait to get just a little better signal. We'll come back to you.
Oh, no worries.
Actually,
great job.
You're on a better cell now. The image is clearer.
Yeah, it is a lot better.
Yeah.
So, Gary, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm down here in Southern California in Riverside, sort of east of Los Angeles.
So, you know, I've been on that highway that he's on right there. So it's
14.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful drive. And we've got Kim on board. Kim is one of our writers, of course, at Geek News Central as well. Kim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. Doing fine.
So Dion, while your signal looks a little better there, what you said you're using a camera that you got from Walmart, but how you got that hooked up?
Just USB, standard USB, nothing special. Like I said, it's about a $9 one I bought and just hooked it up and went on my way.
Well, that's cool. So are you you're already heading out for the holidays, or are you just you just on the way down to LA, or where are you headed?
Yeah, I'm an electrician by trade, and so I am heading to a couple service calls today. Actually, got one in the San Fernando Valley in North Hollywood, California, and then I got another one out in Ontario, California. So I'm making the rounds.
Yeah, you are. You know,
won't be far from me either, because Riverside's right near Ontario, Dion.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah, Ontario's an interesting little interesting town. You know, of course, if you're coming out of LAX, it's with good traffic. It's you know, about a 40-minute drive, I think, if I remember correctly. But we used to have the very first podcast expo was held at the Ontario Convention Center there until they figured that they wanted to move out of sleepy Ontario and go to Vegas or something. And I think that was kind of the start of the end of the show per se, but it's kind of cool to see his dream.
Ontario is not so sleepy anymore, but it's a great airport to fly in and out of compared to LAX.
Well, that's true. And it's sometimes
wonderful. A lot of people don't even know about it.
And sometimes cheaper too, you know?
Yep.
I know that Hawaiian Airlines directly feeds Ontario Airport, which is nice. It's direct flight for me now. United doesn't, but I fly United pretty much exclusively now. So if I want to cash in on the miles, I need to, you know, fly into Vegas. Well, guys, I guess the crux of my thing today, I wanted to talk just a little bit. Many of you, especially the team members here, watched the coverage of the show last year. Many of you actually edited a lot of the articles that went up on GNC for CES 2011. And just looking for some feedback on what we can do this year as a team is there, for at least for my writers, for the team members at GNC, what can we do to make it easier for you guys to go through that onslaught of content that I'm going to basically dump on the team here on January 14th when we start processing stuff.
You know, are we going to use the same like grid that we did last year, the Excel sheet?
I think we will. We'll use Google Docs, use that spreadsheet, and that way we can kind of keep track.
Okay.
You think that
that
worked out well last year?
I thought so. I don't know about, you know, other.
You know, yeah, I thought so as well.
Yeah, no problems.
All right. Well, good. You know what we did for those that are watching is that last year, as I was pushing the videos up on the into the server, I would basically post some info in a spreadsheet that laid out the what the company and some the links to the video and some other stuff. And it's quite the process. You know, a lot of people that are just watching the content, they don't realize the level of work that goes into creating that content. I think, you know, if you step through the process and look at the number of steps that we have to go through, you know, recording the interview really is the easiest step of all. And this year we're going to a different format for doing our actual interviews on the floor. So the actual editing process on my end is going to be much more difficult. We're going to actually do a quick, like, 10-second, hey, here we are at the Sony booth. Go into like a little short 10-second intro, maybe a 5-second mention of the sponsor. Come back to the talent that's going to be interviewing the person. Going to do about 3 minutes on the interview. Mention thanks to the sponsor. Go to the ad spot. Come out of the ad spot and go into the interview wrap. And hopefully keep the interviews down to 5 minutes to 6 minutes and keep them relatively short. But we've got team members, including myself, that sometimes get down in the weeds and the videos can take as long as 10 minutes, which is good for our audience because, you know, that's the type of stuff they like. But, you know, for my editing process, I have to come back and chop that and put it all together, encode it, upload it.
Good for the audience. Not so good for the editor.
Gary, that's beautiful. We got a little red new Rudolph going on here, don't we?
Yeah, I'm gonna nice. Put my head down and buck you.
But
I'm gonna have to step out here. So
hey, Gary,
nice to see you guys.
Hey, Gary, thanks.
We'll see you later.
Thanks so much. I think you guys have some of the same avatar stuff. So the, you know, then uploading it, then you guys go to town and review the videos and do the write-ups. You know, it sounds simple, but you know, that from the time all it's a lot of work. It's a couple hours, you know, for each posting that goes up online. But, it's, you know, it is what it is. My pocketbook impact your guys' pocketbook gain, right?
Right.
Definitely. I think the only thing I'd suggest is if we make sure we have the, you know, the sort of template that you want to list each article agreed in advance, and right. also to have a list of all the names of the various presenters,
yeah.
just so that we get people's names right.
Yep. And I think that'll help. Yeah, what were you saying, Kim?
Yeah, no, he's right on that, because sometimes, you know, getting people's names spelled right and, you know, that kind of stuff is...
It's true, and, you know, I think maybe what we should do is take a picture of the person's badge that we're interviewing and have that as part of the, or lady, have that as part of the stock data that you can go to and at least load that up and say, okay, yeah, it was Jim, you know, and here's his, you know, 25 letter long last name. And of course I have a hard enough time as it is getting people's names right during the show. I have to ask them two or three times. But Alan, were you on board last year for the CES stuff?
Yes.
I think you were, yeah.
Yeah.
So any thoughts from your perspective?
I agree with what they've said. The spreadsheet worked well. You know, just have some of the information, like a format that we can all use.
Now, Dion, are you a regular listener of the show?
I go in from time to time. I listen in and watch mostly. Actually, when I'm driving, I really can't watch, can I? I gotta listen.
Right.
But from time to time, I will pop in and see what you guys are up to, because I'm a tech head by trade.
Yeah.
Not really by trade, by desire.
now as a pure listener or viewer of the show, you know, did you watch much of the CES content last year, and did you have any thoughts on what we did, what we could do better?
To be honest with you, I missed it at the time because I didn't know you were around. I'm a newbie. To be honest.
Well, we're gonna be throwing stuff at you fast and furious here. Come the new year. It's probably our biggest time of influx of content going. Looks like you're right behind a horse trailer. Yeah, a lot of trailers on the road this morning where you're at, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a big amount of people who have horses and whatnot up in Acton area, and so they're traveling down here. Like, these are reindeer that looks like they're reindeer for probably some kind of event or something. So they're probably contracted to go to an event, I would imagine.
Right. Hey, Andrew, I see that you've got someone sitting on your lap. There is this little young lady? Is she ready for Christmas?
This is Erin. I'm supposed to be babysitting at the moment, but she's popped in to see what's going on. Well, so what do you want for Christmas? She wants a pink castle for her dolls.
Oh, a pink castle for the dolls. Did you see a specific pink castle at the store?
Yes, she's seen one, and she's asked Father Christmas for it. So hopefully it'll arrive next weekend.
Oh, so let's see her. I think I've seen her before. How old is she? Is she three or four? How old
she's four. She's four.
You're pretty cute.
She can't hear what you're saying, Tom.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. You're on a headset.
So do you want to go downstairs and watch TV? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to pop out for a second time.
Oh,
I'll take
okay.
it downstairs.
It's fine.
Okay, I'll be back in a minute.
You know, my kids have gotten to the point where now they just, you know, they just use technology and use, you know, they grow up in the digital age, and it's definitely different than when I was, you know, there was no internet when most of us were growing up, and it's fun to see how they use the technology and the curiosity. And you know, you go back and think about that video that went viral a few months ago about that baby that was. Thought she was playing with an iPad, but it was an actual newspaper, and was trying to make it you know, scan, you know, basically a scale and everything else. So one thing that we've been doing this year so far is we've been working to get great profile sheets from the vendors. I don't know if I can show one of those profile sheets or not. Let me see if I can. I have to cover up the live stream for a second and bring up the email here, and I'll show you guys this. So I think what we're going to do this year too is we're going to let me just pick one in the middle. Not that one. Yeah. Okay, so here's a company. Now let me go ahead and scroll over here and bring this email into the top of the picture. We've got a profile sheet where they're giving us all the a lot of details. And did we provide this last year to you guys? This is a form that each of the vendors fills out, and it's basically got company name, product or service, whether they're going to bring the product to the booth, any issues, you know, basically if there's embargoes. They provided some background on the actual guest and info on the company. So some direct links here. So I think what my goal will be this year is to make sure you guys have access to this specific spreadsheet, so that as you're going through the through this, hopefully you can look up, you know, an example for here for iTwin. Hopefully it was the person that they've listed in the, you know, Brian Chamberlain. Hopefully he's the one that actually comes to the booth to do the interview. So you guys would have a pretty extensive background on these folks, because they've, you know, they put up a bio and everything else for us. So I don't think we made that as available last year, did we?
No. I don't remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, and this year I revised the template, and actually, if you go, I'll show you guys where this is at. Let's see here. How can I do this? Yeah, let me shrink this down and bring this back up in the, you'll only be able to see this on the stream if you're up looking at the actual video stream, but on TPN.TV, where we actually have people applying for the actual interviews, there's a floor and a broadcast application. So if you look at the broadcast application, it's basically got all the details that we pull in on that form. So it makes it real easy for the host, who's basically maybe have not heard of the company before, to be able to get the information they need on the company and, you know, do like a 2-minute read before the person sets down, or actually read before you come on for your segment, and take, you know, basically be ready for the guest.
Right.
But, you know, I was, another thing that I was wanted to share, and I was hoping that Rob would be on board to this morning, but we had, we extensively plan really everything, and it's still a little early in the process, but I was going to show you guys, if you're watching the stream, you can see this when I bring this up. Of course, I'm covering up the Google Hangout here, is we basically have a full schedule laid out, and this is where the schedule is at this moment, from a fill perspective. And we're still early, so we've probably got 120 interview spots still to fill, but I'm doing about 10 a day, 10 or 15 a day we're adding. But also, we've booked out really our entire activity schedule, starting at basically 6 a.m. each day. And the first columns, you know, we don't start live really until Tuesday. So in this section here, we've got the green, the yellow, and the red. Those are just like 3 days prior to the show that we have absolutely compacted schedules. You know, we're basically scheduling what time we're going to breakfast every morning. First day's gear pickup, booth setup. Next day is basically booth training, mock interviews. We'll do a couple hour live broadcasts as a test on Sunday, 10 CES unveiled. Then we leave CES unveiled at 6 p.m. and go to startup debut and wrap that day at about 10 o'clock at night. And then Monday, We leave out same thing, breakfast about 7, and then press day starts. So we'll do attend events all day for press event. 4 p.m. we'll do a 2-hour wrap on what we had, what we've learned from press day. And then at 7 p.m. we go to digital experience. Now this is even before the show opens. And then Tuesday we start again pretty early, but we arrive at LVCC for our first day of live coverage, all day coverage at 9 a.m. and then go all the way through 5 p.m. Then we leave there and go to Showstoppers. But the first, I think the first 4 days, I don't think we make it back to the hotel after leaving at 7 a.m. until 10 p.m. at night. So it's a pretty busy show.
Hey, Todd, you're missing one. You're missing one thing on your schedule.
What was that?
Coffee.
I have some spots in here where I say sleep.
Okay.
Yeah, coffee, and you know, and here's the sad thing is, you know, you don't even schedule yourself for lunch. You know, we go to breakfast and make ourselves a huge breakfast, and you know, from there it's full stop. And you know, you're lucky if you get finger food at some of these night events. But you know, we have some pretty strict rules in place for the team too. We don't drink alcohol at any event until basically like the evening events. Basically, we're allowed to have a cocktail in the last 15 minutes of an event. You know, the last thing you want to do is go interview a corporate executive and have, you know, the smell of alcohol in your breath.
And you don't want to wake up the next morning with the, you know.
Yeah. And you got to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed to ready to go the next day. So, you know, I think I put down here on Saturday because we finished shipping everything Saturday morning. And I put on the time hack here, 11 a.m., drink beer. You know, so it's, you know, it's a pretty involved process. But we even got a schedule that lays out some of the very, I guess what you call high profile booth interviews. Wednesday we'll be in Mercedes-Benz at 9, we'll be in Ford at 11, we'll be in Sony's booth on 5 p.m. on Tuesday. You know, just there's certain vendors we had to, I guess for a better word, acquiesce to and make appointments with. We don't normally do that because it's hard to know where we're going to be at any given moment. But another thing that Kara has done, and Kara is our chief sheep herder. She keeps us all on schedule, and she has laid out, we all know what time we're going to be on the air, what team we're going to be with, where we're supposed to be from a logistics standpoint. And she manages that all behind the scenes. This year we've got a great team lineup, and I was going to talk about those guys a little bit. Of course, we've got coming back Andy McCaskey from SDR News, Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine. We have, from talent standpoint, we've got Courtney Wallen. She's a new addition to SDR. And then we've got Andy Smith. He's does a geocaching show. He'll be on board. Steve Lee is does Waves of Tech. He'll be with us. And then we've got the full support staff. We've got Jamie Davis is coming down. He's going to be helping us out. I guess we lost. Who did we lose?
It was Andrew.
Yeah, he tried to come back, yeah. Michael Dell is going to be there helping. He's going to be doing support engineering. Of course, we've got Jack, the TriCaster operator. He'll be coming out from Dallas. And then it's just a whole list of other people. Don Bain will be the gadget professor. Will be out for the show for a couple of days. And his son, Dave Lee, Steve Lee's son, will be there. So I think total we're going to have, it looks like 15 people right now. We've got 15 people that are going to be at the show. So a lot of bodies, a lot of moving parts. But the goal is to have the live stream have a lot more people. Well, I see you're back, Andrew. Looks like you're in a different location this time.
Yes, I had to relocate to the kitchen so I can get dinner ready for the little one.
Okay.
She'd been asleep whilst when the show started, and then she's popped up, so she's now demanding some pasta.
Yeah, so
I'm just gonna have to. I'll be on the audio, but I'll be ferreting around in the kitchen at the same time.
I think it's
multitasking for the modern man.
Yeah, I think you. What are you? 8:30 at night there now, or what's the time difference now?
So it's five. It's about 5:30.
Oh, 5:30. Okay, so 10 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. We don't change our clocks, and neither do you. The rest of the country does. So
I'll just be popping in and out.
So is everybody ready for Christmas? You guys got your shopping done? Are you ready for Christmas? Alan, are you ready to go?
For the most part, everything big's taken care of. Just a few stocking stuffers left.
How about you, Kim?
Yeah, I'm done. My husband's not, but he waits until last minute anyway, so he'll be out Christmas Eve.
I think we hear Andrew definitely cooking in the background.
Sorry, I'll mute the mic. Yeah, we've got most of our Christmas stuff sorted, so it's just a few stocking fillers and bits and bobs and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, ready to go. Hopefully be able to enjoy the last week, because you know, when you're always running around, it's great to have everything sorted so that you can just kind of enjoy the season.
Yeah, I told my wife, I said, I'm going to try, and I use the word try to take basically just not work on the 21st to the 23rd. And she just looked at me, says, are you kidding? He says, you're going to try not to work on the 21st, 23rd. She says, it's never going to happen. And it's probably true. We've got a bunch of stuff going on. And as sad as I would like not to just take, you know, and go to the beach. Of course, I can do that here in Hawaii. It's still 80 degrees. Go to the beach. I just don't think it's going to happen. Dion, this time we're seeing you. Oh, well, I guess we're seeing an avatar. Your video stream dropped out. I do have a few things on the tech side to kind of chat about today that popped up. I don't know if you guys saw or not, but what do you guys think about this thing that's been going on with Universal Music Group and their takedown of this video on a Mega Upload? Have you guys been following that at all?
I've just seen the headlines, but I think the last one I saw said the video had been put back up, correct?
Yeah, it did. And you know, so, you know, initially the Mega Upload thought that they had a DMCA battle going on. Basically, they thought that the UMG group had, you know, just arbitrarily forced their video offline through a DMCA takedown notice. And what it turns out, it's they have a different type of takedown. UMG's got a deal with YouTube where they can basically go in and take down videos that contain their artists or stuff that they think that they own without a DMCA notice. And what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to move that content over to Vevo and put it on their Vevo website, which I'm not too familiar with. But YouTube sent a letter to the folks at Ars Technica, said, UMG underscored the point by including a letter sent to YouTube on Wednesday. In that letter, he said, your letter could be read to suggest that UMG rights to use YouTube's content management system respects a certain user-posted videos are limited in instances in which UMG asserts a claim that a user-posted video contains material that infringes a UMG copyright. As you know, UMG's right in this regards are not limited to copyright infringement, as set forth by an agreement that they made between YouTube and UMG. Now, what's happened is YouTube has responded to some of these claims that UMG can basically take videos down. And they've said, our partners do not have the right to take down videos from YouTube unless they own the rights to them or they are live performances controlled through exclusive agreements with the artists, which is why basically Google reinstated the Mega Upload video. Now, Mega Upload still can go after UMG for damages, but not over the DMCA takedown. But I think it's pretty scary that a company like Universal Music Group could just take down a video. And what they had done is over at This Week in Tech, I think that's the right show that's over there at Twit.
Yeah, it is.
Their video got taken down for just showing, like, you know, 15 seconds of the video and no audio. So, you know, they pulled it. And so here you've got, you know, This Week in Tech, which was using the content in a fair use standpoint, reporting the news, you know, UMG just pulled it down. To me, I don't know about you guys, but it seems a bit of a stretch. At what point are we going to lose control of all content that's on the net, or have we already?
Yeah, that's not the first time that's happened to Twit either. That's happened several times. They've been taken down for short clips they played during news stories.
Were they in the? Do you know in the previous ones? Do you know if they were doing audio as well, or were they just doing the video part?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. I think.
Huh.
Yeah, but on this one, it's called This Week. The show they're doing is
Tom Merritt's Daily Show, right?
News.
Right.
Yeah, it's like This Week in News or something, or Today News or something like that. And it was definitely a news program, and this was being used as a, you know, background to a commentary, you know, and then, you know, like you said, it got taken down, you know. And, you know, it's funny because it's like, you know, the way they're talking, it's like, we can take down any video we want.
Right.
You know, we don't even have to own it.
Yeah. A little odd. Now, Andrew, you being in the UK, of course, you guys don't have the DMCA over there. You've got probably something that's similar to that. What are your thoughts on this? Is it a little bit disturbing?
Yeah, it's definitely a bit disturbing. And, you know, I haven't really, I mean, I saw the stuff last week about being just the kind of tit for tat that was going on between the two groups. And I hadn't really picked up on the bit that they were saying alternative reasons that they could take the stuff down. But it just sort of in a similar vein, I've been looking at some stuff, some programs, and it was about the evolution of ebooks and how, you know, in 10 years' time, the ebook will be, it will be everywhere, and paper books will just be, part of history. And really one of the things that was coming through was that the difference between a paper book and an ebook is that an ebook can still be controlled. And we've seen the way that, you know, that Amazon in theory can basically wipe books from the Kindle.
Right.
But I mean, that kind of issue just doesn't exist with a paper book. Once that book is in someone's hands, you know, you can't really get rid of it. But as stuff becomes more and more electronic, it's far, far easier for, you know, somebody who has a problem with a publication just to basically erase it from every device that people have. And I think that's more, it's going to be more and more of a concern as we move more and more stuff online, and more stuff is owned by the conglomerates. And, you know, if they don't like something, they just flick the switch and it's gone.
It's true. And another thing too to consider is using the book analogy. They don't care what you do with that book. Once you have it, you can share it. You can sell it in a garage sale. You can give it to a friend. You know, that book may change hands 25 times and it's only been purchased once. So, you know, I look at all the digital books that I have bought, and, you know, beyond my immediate family, no one else, I really can't take those to a garage sale and sell them. So there's no second sale capability within books you own digitally either. So, you know, from that standpoint, it's a win for the publishers. They make more money, but definitely a loss to society as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, you could just see. I mean, can you really imagine that a book critical of Apple would appear in the iBook store or anything like that, or even a book critical of Amazon? I mean, they can just say, no, we're not gonna publish it. It's not gonna be available on the Kindle. And that's it. You know, end of argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big problem for libraries because, you know, it's hard for, they have to get, you know, they have to get the people to give them the electronic, you know, rights to the, you know, books, and then obviously you're going to lend out a book from library more than once to different people, so that, you know, becomes a problem too.
You know, we're a big... Go ahead, Al. Alan.
Doesn't Kindle now have their own lending library?
I don't know if they do or they don't.
I believe I heard that announced back when they announced the Fire and the other.
I think you can share with friends on certain publications. I think Barnes & Noble did that first.
Right. I believe Kindle, if you're an Amazon Prime member now, you get one book per month that you can check out.
Huh. Well, one thing that that I see too, hey, Brian, this is Brian. He's one of our team members at Raw Voice. How are you this morning?
Not bad. How's everyone doing?
Good. We're just kind of hanging out here, and we were talking earlier a little bit about upcoming CES, and we're kind of right now just talking about this thing that was going on with the Universal Music Group taking that video down from Mega Upload and the stuff that was gone there, and that's kind of evolved into a discussion about digital books and being able to share them as where if you had a paperback, you would just hand the paperback over to a friend and can't necessarily do that with digital, and also companies can just on a whim have digital copies disappear and stuff. So it's kind of what we're chatting about now. I think it's a big issue. We're a big proponent here. My wife takes my kids to the public library every week, and they walk in with a bag full of books to turn in, and they walk out with a bag full of books for the next 7 to 10 days. And with the budgets being tight in many countries or many states, sadly libraries are being cut. The number of libraries and the hours, and that's true here in Hawaii too. But for us, I couldn't afford to. I'd have to spend a mini fortune to afford all the books my kids have read over the past 15 years. And I don't know. Maybe people aren't as avid readers as they used to be. I know I read a lot when I'm on the road, not when I'm home. But
it's one of the things that I think would be absolutely fabulous that if we were able to pay a subscription, whether it's $10, $20 or whatever, and you could actually get hold of any book in the world, I think that'd just be the change that could create for around the world, I think would be fabulous. Instead of you're having to own the physical copy of a book or own a CD, the fact that you could just say, right, I want, book that was, from anywhere in the world, I think that would just be great.
Look at higher education stuff or K-12 and making that stuff digitally available to third worlds that normally wouldn't be able to, access to some of these books. Of course, you're dealing with language barriers when you're also outside of the United States, if they're not an English speaking nation. So you'd have to have, some stuff translated, but I think you're right. It would be cool, wouldn't it? It'd be a dynamic shift in what people would have access to. And the thing is, will people, if the socioeconomic situation is such that people aren't even able to afford a device to read these on, it doesn't do much good, I guess. But
I can speak for the higher education side of things. I work at a university here in Ohio, and one thing that's always a challenge these days, and I'm not even speaking for digital books, just regular books are very expensive for college students. Books nowadays start at like $75-$80 and go all the way up to $500 just for a book. And college textbooks are really, really expensive. And any of us who's gone through college, we've probably, we bought our books, sold them back, went through that whole thing. And now with digital books coming into the market, a lot of publishers are getting involved with that. And a lot of students are trying to save money with digital books, whether they're copying them and, sending them illegally to their other classmates or whatnot. But the publishers are starting to figure this out. And they actually created a company that I like to call the Hulu for textbooks. It's called CourseSmart. And we piloted that on campus, and it's really interesting. And it kind of hints at maybe there's going to be a subscription model going down the road with this. But it gives, if you get the university to buy in with this service, it gives faculty free rein to 90% of the college textbooks out there. And so as a professor, I can log into the site and I can have full free access to any of these books, and all the major publishers are part of this company, sort of like how Hulu's set up with the media companies. And then what they do, and this is the interesting thing, then they put the links to these books in their course syllabuses or syllabi for their faculty members, and then the students click on it and they have the option to buy them or rent them. And obviously there's a different price point for each one, and it's still buying the actual physical copy, but it's expensive. And then, and you were talking about devices, they offer them an HTML5 version so people can view them on their browsers. They have mobile apps for both. And they have a lot of options for this, but they're still, you know, gouging the students, in my opinion, with these high prices. And what they're trying to do is get the universities to buy in on these high-priced services and allow students to have access to it. It's interesting to see the way that they're doing that.
Hey, Brian, do you think that we're going to come to a point where, you know, so a full-time student pays, at least here in Hawaii, and I don't know if it's everywhere that's like this, a full-time student pays X amount of dollars per month to go to school, and that covers their tuition. You know, I think here in Hawaii now it's something ridiculous, like $13,000 a year for tuition. Could you see a point with these digital books going the way they are that a student pays an additional $1,500 a year, and he just gets access to all his course books? Do you ever see that come into effect? Because
a lot of universities have a tech fee that students pay, and it covers a lot of these things. Sometimes it'll cover the learning management system. At Case Western Reserve, where I work right now, part of their students' tuition gives them access to the whole Adobe Creative Suite, and they can just download it, put it on any machine that they want. A library of resources, a bunch of Microsoft and Apple software, but not books yet. And it's definitely an avenue that universities are looking at, though they're struggling too, especially the state institutions, because they're losing funding left and right, and they're just trying to cover costs for other things. So there's definitely avenues to be pursued, but I don't think there's any really right answer at this point.
You know, and the trick that these doggone book writers do is the professor says, okay, there's a new version of this book out. And of course these textbooks are updated almost every year. And so that, you know, so you have to have edition 26 instead of edition 25. And generally there's, you know, there's not too many changes in those, but that's what they require as part of the coursework. I think that's the thing that's more irritating to me, you know, having just finished my degree earlier this year. You know, it was amazing how much I was paying for books. I just think that at some point something's got to give digitally, and they're going to have to change their model. Because if it doesn't, then the students are just going to steal the books, and that's not good either. But maybe at some point, each student, as if they're a full time student, are going to come and say, "Okay, you pay me $1,500, and we're going to give that money to Courseware or whatever this company is that you were just talking about, and that'll give you access to just the books that's going to be in your curriculum this year." I don't know if that'll ever work, but it'd be nice if it did.
You know, and on top of that, Todd, there's a lot of other options that faculty are looking into. There's an open textbook movement where faculty are dynamically creating textbooks and giving students access to those kind of things.
That's cool.
There's using alternative methods to books. You don't necessarily, like, for example, the class I teach, one of the things I say in the syllabus are there are no books for this class. Everything we're going to be doing is going to be digitally in some sense. And I'll give students articles, blog posts to read. And I essentially create a mashup of resources that are freely available on the web and create a textbook in that sense. And I think that's where faculty need to start looking as alternatives, possibly to just replace the textbook or to be to a kid.
I see Rob Greenlee.
Hey, go ahead, Kim. Dropping off now.
All right, Kim, thanks for hanging out with us, and
you're
take
welcome.
Care. All right.
You too.
Hey, Rob, good morning, and welcome to Saturday Morning Tech. How are you?
Well, thanks. Yeah, I got a little delayed because my webcam wasn't working.
Well, that was even happened to me this morning, so there must be something in the air.
Yeah, I'll say.
Hey, I've been doing some research here, guys, on did anybody else have anything else to say about the digital book stuff? If they did, feel free to chip in here. But one thing I saw on USA Today, and I don't ever read this newspaper or read their website, but I got a link to it from someone. And this is kind of funny here. Apparently, KLM is launching a social media campaign that is going to help passengers pair themselves up when they fly. So basically, you're not necessarily going to have your profile on your flight, but what you are going to have is there's some social media links that's going to indicate whether or not you're single, and they're going to try to put single people with single people and people with like interests together, so that at least you have an interesting seatmate. Now, that to me sounds a little bit on the creepy side, especially when it's for single people trying to connect. But I guess KLM is trying to make the love connection. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think it is a little creepy in a way.
Are they going to offer up Mile High Club points?
Well, that's a good.
Well, that's exactly what they were talking about.
Yeah, they were. They were talking about that. So anyway, well, it's called Meet and Seat Service. So, you know.
I don't know. I mean, Todd, you obviously fly a lot more than I do, but when I fly, I don't tend to be that social. I tend to just like, I get in my own little zone and I want to get to my destination. Even if I travel with my wife, we're not having a conversation the whole time. We're just, you know, doing our own thing.
I know within about a minute of someone sitting down beside me now how things are going to go. I fly so many segments. If the person immediately says, "Hey, how you doing? Good afternoon. Where are you headed?" Yeah, I know we're going to have a nice flight, but sometimes they just look at you and give you that look and you're like, "Oh, I'm going to stay in my corner here." And you know, and what's kind of funny though too is that because I fly the same route a lot, I pick the same seat, and a lot of people pick the same seat every time they fly, especially when I get upgraded. I like 5F, and that seat has about this much more. It leans back about that much more than the other seats. And so one of the guys that I see all the time, he's, I think we've been like on 10 or 15 flights together, because he picks the opposite seat. So we're like, we see each other and you're like, oh, we're on the same flight again. So, you know, if you fly a lot, you see the same people. It's kind of weird. You know, it's really weird when you know the flight attendants by their first name too. That's even odder. So Rob, how's things over there at Zune, or actually the Xbox team, because you're part of the Xbox team?
Yeah, it's going fine. This is the peak time for us, and you know, we're shipping all of our updates, and there's a lot of lots of activity of things going out the door.
So, yeah, how's the new update to the console's been well received?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just one process here, as everybody knows, as we march towards, you know, what's happening with Windows 8, and it's part of this process that I think that, you know, I've been looking forward to for a long time, is kind of the unification of the whole ecosystem, and I think it's an exciting kind of movement that the company's making.
So how is the how's the company responding to the new media side of their? Is that just a continual work in progress?
Yeah, it really is. Just, you know, it's a continuation. We're just getting started, and there's a lot more to come. And I think that it's going to be interesting over the next couple of years. I think TV and video and movies and all that kind of stuff is kind of really, I think, becoming a focus of the industry. You know, I think this whole kind of revolution around the TV, I think, is the next really, really big thing that's that somebody's gonna, you know, crack this code. And I think the Xbox has a great, you know experience right now as we kind of move into that, but I think that there's going to be some other players that are going to have an impact on this too, so it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of plays out here over the next 2 years.
you know, we I was really anal with the guys and making sure we were ready for the update to Google TV. And the Google TV update has happened to both the Sony and the Logitech review. But sadly, there's something with the Logitech review that is different. And they're not letting us basically add our channel or add our app to the Equisphere. So I'm hoping Angelo can get on that soon and look at it. He indicated like he was busy and wasn't going to be able to do it. But I'm hoping it's just a version issue and all it has, we have to send up a build with some new tag or something. But, you know, I was really psyched and really psyched. I went, you know, went over and found it and linked on it and it said unavailable. I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. I was pissed. So there is some growing pain still yet, you know, with multiple devices having to deal with their quirks. Yeah. So it is what it is.
If you get it worked out, that'd be good for you.
Oh, it'd be awesome. But, you know, the thing is, it's about the Google TV, though, is I just, you know, really, you don't even really need the channel app anymore to a certain extent because you can go www.whatever website and it works just fine that way, too. So now, Alan or Andrew, do you guys, either you guys have a Google TV?
No, don't have. Sorry, we don't have Google TVs. I don't think they're over here at all. I think the closest we get is probably the Boxy.
Right.
It's available. And there are no Roku don't sell over here either. So it's really just the Boxy and anything like the Samsung TVs. They're available here. And we have a Sony Blu-ray player that has, you know, some of the smart TV functionality built into it.
Right. Alan, how about you? Is Alan still with us?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm here. I had some background noise, so I had to mute my mic. I just use Windows Media Center. I have a computer in my entertainment center.
Yeah, Brian, what are you using these days?
I try to get my hands on any piece of equipment that I can. regularly, I have in the living room, I have a Boxy box. And I also have a PS3, and I used to try to do everything on the Boxy box because I really liked the idea of the platform and whatnot. But I didn't find that Netflix worked that well with the Netflix streaming. So I actually resorted to my PS3 for the Netflix streaming in the bedroom. And actually that goes back to that Xbox discussion. I've a lot of the news that I've been reading about with the updates to the UI on some of the stuff they've done with the Xbox has actually gotten me interested in it. But the tough thing is rationalizing that to my wife.
Right.
Microsoft needs to put a commercial out like they did with the PowerPoint where the kid does the PowerPoint to say why he needs to get the computer, and then the husband does the same thing. They need something like I need something like that to rationalize why we need another video game system in the house. But those are the main ones that I have. I had a Wii, and I haven't unpacked that since I moved to Ohio. So I can't speak much for that. And then in the bedroom, I have a Roku box, and I'm 100%. We have no cable. We don't do anything like that. So it's all what do they call? What's the term? They cut the cord. We've totally cut the cord here. So
cut the cable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it just goes to show you here, and I got the sunshine in my face, so I got to turn the brightness down a little bit. But the one thing that is true is what we're seeing now is that everyone is consuming stuff on a lot of different devices. So that's, for me, is exciting. And, you know, I think it's going to continue to trend that way. Hey, moving topics here, over the Black Friday and the Thanksgiving holiday and the basically the time here for Christmas shopping, Amazon told consumers, hey, we're going to pay you $5 to leave a store. But now, according to all things D, eBay is giving you $10 to return. So eBay has partnered with three major retailers to get online shoppers to also buy at brick-and-mortar stores. This is kind of interesting. But, you know, I'm also hearing that at some retail outlets, like specifically camera-specific stores, they're actually now charging consumers. So if a consumer comes in and say, I want to see a Canon EOS 60D, they're actually charging the consumer to manhandle and play with the camera. Because what's happening is people are coming in, they're playing with the camera, they're looking at the lenses, and then they walk out without making a purchase, and they go online and buy it cheaper while having gotten their in-store experience to see which model they want. You know, it doesn't bode well at all for the brick and mortar retail outlets if they're having to start charging to touch a camera. And what do you guys think about this whole $5 to leave the store, $10 to return? Is this going to be
I hadn't heard about this.
Well, basically,
do you know what retailers are doing it?
Well, let me look here at what eBay's doing. Who were the retailers? Did they say? Okay, it's Toys R Us, Dick's Sporting Goods, and Aeropostale. It's a clothing store. So basically, if you go in there, eBay is going to give consumers to spend $100 online a $10 voucher to spend at the same retailer store. The promotion went live yesterday and will run through December 19th. So that's interesting. So if you buy $100 worth of stuff through eBay at that specific store, eBay store, they're going to give you another $10 voucher to go into the store. Why would you do that? Why don't you give me the $10 voucher and I'll go to the store?
So basically it's saying if you go to the authorized eBay store, so if I go to the Dick's authorized eBay store and I buy stuff off their authorized store, they'll give me a voucher to go into the store and buy more stuff.
I don't know if you have to go through the eBay site, because, you know, a lot of these guys like Toys R Us and stuff have an eBay store per se, mm-hmm. or maybe their purchasing is there. So it's not fully obvious to me here on how it works.
I mean, I guess I just don't understand. It seems like the retailer is going to get the money no matter what.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah. And of course what Amazon had done is they said, hey, you go in and here's an app. You scan the barcode. Oh yes, we have that for you. We'll give you $5 additional off if you buy it right now online. That's what pissed off all the retailers. I thought it was funny. I just, you know, we've all been doing that. We've been using Red Laser or one of those other apps to scan a barcode and
get a discount is all you're getting here.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I have noticed doing my Christmas shopping this year is that the in-store prices are getting much closer to the online prices.
Oh.
And I want to support the local store, and you know, if the price is close to the online, then I'm going to buy it in the local store. Obviously, if they're, you know, $50 away, then the online store is going to win.
Yeah.
But you know, I was looking at a PVR, and there was only there was about £10 difference between what I could get it in the online store and versus getting it in a proper bricks and mortar store. So it's good to see that. I mean, the interesting thing here is in the UK. In the US, I don't think your online stores pay sales tax. Is that right?
Some
don't. Yeah, it depends on the state and the retailer. But yeah.
Well, I mean, here in the UK, it doesn't matter. You have to pretty much pay we would have VAT, so it doesn't matter whether you're online or a bricks and mortar store. You pay the same taxes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the direction that this country is going to. It's just not there yet.
Yeah, Amazon. Go ahead.
Like the kitten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you can see. Yeah, that's, we've got four kittens in the house right now.
That's funny. Amazon is actually starting to reverse their thought process, and they basically are going to. There was an article a couple of weeks ago where they're actually going to petition the Congress to just make it across the board. Okay, if we're going to have to do this, then let's do it in every state. But I don't think that the Congress can tell each state that they have to collect sales tax on digital goods. I think that's each state is going to have to decide that and move forward. I don't think that the Congress can can make that decision or that iteration. But, you know, one thing here in Hawaii is it costs so much to ship stuff in. And what I've been noticing this year, it really torques me. I had to purchase a couple of things for the show, for CES. And shipping, they are gouging in big time. It didn't, in previous years, it was pretty close to what I would have paid on my own FedEx account. But I had a Pelican case shipped in, and the weight and the cubes, I had that. I priced it out on the FedEx, on my FedEx account, and in shipping on it would have been about $47 to bring it here. And every retailer wanted to charge me like $130 to have it shipped in. And so that's where they're making their money. You know, they have this great price listed, and then they charge you, you know, $80 more on shipping, and they, you know, that's where they make their profit. And it looks good from a search perspective, but they make the difference up in shipping costs. Now, those of you that live in the lower 48, you guys are getting a lot of free shipping on some purchases, and that's good, but no such beast here in Hawaii. Go ahead and move on to a different topic. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in the SOPA that's been going on in Congress. I don't know if you guys have been following. I've been talking about a lot on the show. But isn't it amazing? They had some hearings last week that turned into this bashing of senators bashing, or House of Representatives bashing one another. And these congressional people are clueless when it comes to technology. I mean, just absolutely clueless. And I agree with this article that I found on motherboard.vice.com, where they say, "Dear Congress, it's no longer okay to not know how the internet works." And is it because these guys are just old fogies and they just don't have a clue? Or, you know, I just, you know, some of the stuff is not complicated, but people just, they just don't get it. You know, where's the disconnect? Is it the age issue?
Well, it's also, I mean, these same folks are not reading the legislation that they're voting on either. So I think it's just a general, they just aren't paying attention because they either don't have the time or they don't really think that they need to.
You know, you got every you know, every technical company in the country coming out and say this is bad, 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 bad legislation, but yet these guys are shills for the NPAA and the RIAA, and they just it's just amazing. It really is, and I just it just goes to show you they've got a huge disconnect. Time to fire the whole damn lot of them. Get rid of the whole group and start over. You know, it's just amazing. It really is. What else? Okay, this carrier IQ thing has kind of already burned its course through the news cycle here. But Sprint has announced yesterday that carrier IQ has been disabled on their devices, and they've stopped collecting the data. But do you guys believe everything that carrier IQ had to say about their reporting and what they were collecting, and or have they been collecting all our keystrokes and putting that in a massive data warehouse and letting the FBI and whatever agency access to it? Any thoughts?
Yeah, Todd, I think that there's more going on here than what we're probably being told. I mean, I think it's been kind of, I don't know how common knowledge, but it's been known for a long time that phone calls and text messages and emails and things have been monitored by our government for years for, you know, trying to control terrorism, you know, to keep an eye on, you know, external communications and even internal communications. So it wouldn't surprise me that at some level, all these things are being tracked and scanned. You know, how much detail is being done on that side? That's the big question. And what's the technology being used? Maybe it's different on, you know, if it's at the carrier level, it may not be at the handset level, but it's certainly happening at the carrier level. So anyway, that's just kind of my two cents. I think it's a lot more complicated question than I think. Just looking at this carrier IQ is just potentially just one little piece of a much bigger story.
And don't get me wrong, I fully understand it. If you are, if you become under the scrutiny of the government and they get a search warrant and they put a wiretap on your phone and your devices and your internet, that's one thing. But just to be collecting everything from everybody and sending that to a big cloud space in the sky for supposed performance monitoring. Why do they need to know when I text my wife that I send her a little note saying, hey, I love you or something like that? You know, it's that's just a little matter of fact, it's a lot unnerving. You know, it goes back to you know, Facebook in the UK has to, if you want to see what Facebook has collected on you, they have to send you basically that data. And actually, it was a gentleman in Austria specifically who requested that data, and you know, Facebook sent him a disk that contained 1,200 PDF files of everything that he'd ever done on Facebook, keystroke mentions, searches, text messages, emails, updates, you know. And if Facebook is collecting 1,227 pages worth, or 1,227 PDFs worth of data of what you've done on Facebook, and they're using that to mine your information, they know us better than we know ourselves.
Well, Todd, I think that's the value that Facebook sees themselves having in the marketplace. If you look into the future here, is you know, the more information they can know about us, the better they can target advertising messages. And that's really what Facebook is it's an advertising platform. And I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's the company that's being built here.
But when does that advertising targeting turn into insurance premiums being canceled because you mentioned you smoked a cigar on Facebook?
And well, I think that's a very interesting question. I mean, you just look at the issues that have come around, you know, putting trackers in your car, right? And you know, you can get a discount on your insurance premium by putting a GPS tracker in your car that will track how fast you drive and where you drive, right, as a basis for your insurance. I think it's just a clue to what the future could look like once they start getting access to this kind of data as a reference point to, you know, costs, right, for you to get services or insurance or all these kind of things. So I think as we look into the future, I think we all need to be really aware of the stuff that we do may ultimately be, you know, may have an impact on our
ability. Oh. Something happened, Rob, and your video went to crap, or your audio went to crap.
I think the big difference, though, is that on Facebook, yeah, there's a certain expectation about the Facebook being reasonably public, or you know, you are actively sharing with people, and in some ways you can also make a decision whether you use Facebook or not. But I think the worrying thing about the carrier IQ thing is that there was, you know, I have an expectation of privacy on my phone that when I send text messages to my wife, no one else is reading them. And I think that's the boundary that's been crossed here, is that they were doing stuff that they did not want you to know about. Whereas Facebook, for all their faults, they're reasonably upfront that they are an advertising company and they're mining your data. And yeah, they might mine it more than you want, and they may mine it more than you know, but at least you kind of know that they're in that game. Mm-hmm. Whereas the fact that these mobile phone companies were doing it, that's where they crossed the line, and I think they should be penalized severely for it.
So have we moved into the Big Brother era? Are we there where we just can assume we have no privacy no more and everything we do is monitored? Are we at that point?
Yeah, I think we've been there for a few years now, yeah.
Yeah, with the, we know the satellites in the sky can see down to minute details. There's cameras on every street corner.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, makes you go, doesn't it?
Well, I think that we're not that far away than what was talked about at one point of a police state, right, where people are monitored and watched at all times. I don't think we're that far away from that.
Well, it's amazing what computers can do. So who knows, you know? It might be, might not be a person watching you, but if a computer tags you and you're it, you know, you could get all kinds of unwelcome scrutiny. We'll see, have to see where it goes. I don't know. I think people have become accustomed to it little by little, and the internet has helped the process along because people are, you know, they expect they're being spied on when they're surfing the net now, I guess. Hey, well, of course, the big news yesterday was that Heather Hardy has announced her departure from TechCrunch. So Arrington wrote just an absolute, I mean, if you haven't read this, Mike is in rare form. You can tell that if Arianna Huffington had fell down in the middle of a busy street and there was a semi approaching to hit her, he would probably just stand back and watch. He might even pull out a camera to film it. There is no love lost between Mike Arrington and Arianna Huffington. And I mean, this is a scathing, a scathing write-up. Had anybody seen this last night when this popped?
No, I didn't.
Oh man, he just, if it's over on Tech Meme, if you go over and pull it up, it's pretty good. And basically he says that Arianna Huffington is God at AOL, and she is waging a war where if you cross her, you are gone. Heads are rolling. So I don't know. I don't know what this means for TechCrunch. I don't know what it means for all those other properties at AOL too, because you know, Heather was a pretty big force in their monetization. You know, she drew TechCrunch from $500 million to $10 million in revenue prior to their sale. And pretty interesting. But we'll see. Has TechCrunch lost any luster for any of you guys?
I check the headlines on it, but I rarely read a whole story.
Yeah, I follow basically what pops in the on Tech Meme and stuff from that perspective. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see if they can still continue to be kings. Well, what I want to do, guys, is I want to wrap up here. Unless anybody's got anything that they think that is an outstanding thing we need to talk about past week in tech. But we've got a lot of exciting interviews already lined up. One of the ones I'm really looking forward to is we're going to be talking to a company that makes ballistic iPad and mobile phone cases, and why you need to have a almost indestructible casing. I don't know. I don't know if this thing is, when you say ballistic, it almost sounds like it'll repel bullets. I doubt it goes that far. But we'll be talking with Ballistic and a variety of other companies. Our amount of email influx coming in from all the press people is huge. And this will subside here in a little while, and then we'll actually start reaching out to different vendors and stuff. But we're seeing a trend this year where a lot of companies want us to come to their booths. They got demos they're going to show us. But just some of the lineup that we've got already is Arcos is going to be on. We're going to be talking with New Neck Technology.
Look at the
physical. you got yourself a kitty there, Rob. Oh, we lost Rob. He is muted. We don't hear you, Rob.
Todd.
Yeah.
You posted an article up about I think the CE had cancelled the sort of junior subscription model.
Yeah.
What's actually the implication of that? I wasn't aware of that program.
Well, I think that's why they canceled it. They didn't get the word out. Basically, all it was is you paid a yearly fee. You become what was called a tech enthusiast. And they sent you mailings letting you know what was going on in the CE space. There was really no true benefits for it. The only thing we got an offer one time for a discount on some Verizon product or something, but they really missed the boat there. What they could have done with that, and maybe they're going to do this and not have it a paid service. They haven't said they're going to delete it, but what they should have done was everyone that was signed up for that, that would have been such a huge outlet to get new products into, you know, tech enthusiast hands. But I guess they decided it wasn't worth it. So
what sort of money was it?
It's like, I think $75 a year. It wasn't very much money. But I definitely didn't get $75 worth of value out of it. So I'm sure that went into their decision on dropping it. So, Hey, one company I'm really excited about talking about at CES is called Wild Blue. And I don't know if you guys, and I have to disclose here, I bought stock in a company called Viasat. Viasat is a company that is, up to this point, has done largely commercial communication systems. And there's a lot of course, they're a public company, so there's a lot of information on the web about them. But I knew they were getting ready to send up a satellite that was going to bring into the ability to have broadband internet service at a much higher speeds than what HughesNet offers. And it's a much better alternative for broadband internet than even DSL or 4G. So there's a company going to be at CES called Wild Blue. And they're going to be one of the resellers of this new Viasat service. And I'm hoping that this is widely successful so that the stock purchase I made on Viasat, knowing that they were punching this thing up, what this is really going to serve, it's going to serve rural America. And you basically can be anywhere in the country and get this service. So they're one of the companies where I'm really excited about being able to talk to at CES. It's only $50 a month, and I think it's going to be a good package. Now they got it. Let me just look at see here what they show. Let me put my mom's zip code in here. Oh, they're having problems with their website right now. But anyway, what they're going to be doing is you'll be able to, for rural customers, you'll be able to buy this. So I think it's U.S. centric only. I think the Viasat satellite only looks over the U.S. And what they do is they do a lot of spot beams. And for those of you guys that are kind of familiar with what satellites do, they have a transponder and they focus them on specific areas. And then they have, the way they are able to get the throughput that they do is they do multiple spot beams all over the United States, and they can project a lot of energy into a specific location, which allows them to have good uplink and download speeds. So pretty exciting stuff from the folks at Wild Blue. So I'm really looking forward to having them. And we'll probably actually go to their booth. They're doing demos outside. But Wild Blue is actually going to be selling into the commercial space as well. But I think we're just going to have a lot of cool stuff this year. Rob, are you hearing any rumblings of anything? Is Microsoft making any major announcements, or can you say, or your audio is still muted, I think. We can't hear you at all. Rob, we can't hear you. Okay. He's talking, but we can't hear him. Something happened to Rob's audio. Did you mute yourself, Rob? Nope. All right. Well, I guess we're not going to hear. yeah, you're talking to the mic, Rob, but we can't hear you. Okay. Well, guys, anything that you guys saw this past week you thought was of interest? Alan, anything?
I'm looking forward to the CES, possibly seeing the Windows 8 beta. I saw some leaked screenshots the other day.
Yeah, that'd be nice if they have that out. Andrew, how about you? Anything specific?
No, but I'm looking forward to CES, and I think some of the interesting things are that, because we're doing the write-ups, quite often you see videos that you might not otherwise watch. But then what's interesting to see is that maybe 6 months down the line, the product that you kind of watched you doing actually comes to market. And it either delivers on what you hope, or else it's a bit of a dud. So it's always always interesting to see that.
Or it comes actually a year later. Actually, the folks at Slingbox are finally getting their Google TV app out. That took a year. Brian, how about you? Anything specific you've been following at all, or you've been too busy doing other stuff?
I guess one, because it's something that I'm looking forward to is the ice cream sandwich updates that are starting to come out on these Android phones. I know a lot of Google was waiting for them to launch the phone, the Galaxy Nexus, which came out. I don't know if you guys touched this before I got in this morning, but they launched the Galaxy Nexus on Thursday, I think, and then right after that, Google launched a version of Ice Cream Sandwich for the Nexus S phone on GSM, and T-Mobile's pushing that out now. And I have a Nexus S4G, which is the CDMA version, the Sprint version, and we're all kind of like, well, where's our version? Because we want to get that push, and it goes back to the whole idea of buying a Nexus phone so you can get the operating system as soon as Google pushes it, bypassing the whole going through the carrier as well as the manufacturer. So that's kind of the big one that I've been following. Literally this T-Mobile thing happened yesterday. The phone, the Galaxy Nexus phone, came out the day before. So that's what I'm following. I'm hoping in the next couple of days I'll see something for my phone.
Well, that's cool. And
the Nexus here has been out for probably about a month now, and I have to say it is a very, very nice phone. Very nice. A couple of friends have got them, and you know, I think it really does. If it doesn't actually blow the iPhone into the weeds, it will very soon.
Wow, that's
well. You know, that's the interesting thing is, I've seen that there. Most people are having really good reviews on the phone, yes, but also the whole thing that's encompassing it, which is the operating system, which had a major facelift in this version. And I see that there's a lot of stuff going on. And Leo, he posted a really negative review of the phone. And I've seen a lot of chatter on his Google site about the backlash with that, which I thought was kind of interesting. But I think the big thing is this operating system. It's like you're saying, it's going to give the iPhone competition. I mean, I have a 4S here too, and I think the 4S is behind, you know, especially with Ice Cream Sandwich out. And Siri, in my opinion, is a big gimmicky joke.
So you guys think that that Nexus is going to be that big? That's interesting.
Huh. I don't think the Nexus is going to be big. I think the operating system and the future of the operating system and the changes that they've made and the user interface upgrades and they've made to the functionality, that's what's going to be big.
I see.
Yeah, I mean the phone is nice itself. I mean the screen is lovely. The, you know, it's very responsive. The sound's great. I mean it does. I mean it is the complete package. And you know with the ice cream sandwich, the high end handset, you know it is nice.
Huh.
Yeah, and that operating system's going to come to a lot of the other phones soon, like the Razer, right. Bionic, things like that. And that'll really make it into the mainstream.
You know, I guess I just haven't had enough hands-on time on an actual Android phone. My wife is looking at one, so maybe I'll buy her one of these new ones and we'll give it a try. I see Tom has joined us. Tom, we're just wrapping up here, and just so you know, disclosure-wise, we're streaming live right now, so we're actually up on a couple of different streams. But how are you this morning?
Not bad, not bad. I never know if you guys started two my time or noon your time or wherever.
Yeah,
I got in here a little late. Sorry about that.
No worries. We normally start at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Honolulu Standard Time. So at least while daylight savings is on, then it rolls back to me to 6 a.m. But we always start 9 Pacific, 12 Eastern.
Okay.
Well, guys, I tell you, I want to thank everyone for hanging out here with me for a while. You guys are more than welcome to stay and chat. I'm going to, at this point, kind of wrap up the show. But I want to thank Audible for being a sponsor here. Definitely check out audiblepodcast.com/geeknews for your free 14-day trial. Get an audiobook on me for Christmas. It's a great Christmas present to give away. And I guess, guys, until... We probably won't do this next week because it'll be Christmas Eve unless we have some folks that are dedicated to doing this and not making their wives upset. But we've covered a lot of topics today, talking about what's coming at CES, our schedule, our process, some tech content. I kind of got a little bit caught up on what's going on with Microsoft when Rob's mic was working there. And everyone else, thanks for tuning in. And for those of you that are watching post-show, we'll see you next time. Take care and aloha.